Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman. I'm joined, as always, by my... I don't even know what I want to call you, Payne. I mean, you made fun of my word choice last week, so I'm just going with Payne Insider this week.
I didn't really make fun of it. I just wasn't sure it was the correct describing word. But, here we are. What is this, week 16?
I mean, it feels like week 16, but it's actually only NFL week 4. And I know we traded notes yesterday trying to figure out when we're going to take our bye week. So if we don't get to what, like 2,000 five-star reviews on iTunes, we're just going to take a full week off somewhere in the middle of October.
We did lighten the card a little bit. It's a little, it's not the best NFL card we've had, but we did cut off one game. This could be our downfall. Because as everyone knows, my favorite number 7. It's all about 7. 7 ice cubes in the drink. You wake up at 7. Everything's about 7. We usually have covered 7 games. We're going 6 this week. So if we lose our best bet, this is the reason why.
Well, I don't like the fact that you're thinking negatively before we even get off the ground. But the idea of actually sleeping until 7 seems like a novel concept. I'm going to probably have to set my alarm for like 4:37. Be about the only way I can sneak a 7 into that. But plenty of games on the docket. As you mentioned, not the most attractive card, and it was probably up to us. We might break down just 2 games, but we don't have that luxury. Dave Mason, of course, stops by from betonline.ag to talk about how well the books did last weekend, some of the things he's looking forward to this week. But, Payne, before we get into all of that content, we have another weekly contest winner.
Yes, Patrick Mulm. 3 is the weekly contest winner. It did come down to the tiebreaker, but fortunately this time of year it's about talent, right? Because one of our tiebreakers is what your record is overall, so it's less about luck boxing away into the win for week 1, where it's basically just a drawing, but now it's about what you're doing week to week. So there was a tie at the top, but Patrick Mulm right now I believe has 12 points for the season, so that was what made him the weekly winner.
It's not a bad record. If you're 12-3 out of the gates, it's going to put you in pretty good standing. We know how deep our field is and how talented all of our loyal listeners are when it comes to handicapping football, putting to good use all of the fine things we've taught them over the years. And Payne, how do we look in as far as t-shirts? I know supplies were limited and we were down to only a handful of sizes.
Yeah, we had the first shipment went out yesterday. So limited supply. A lot of the mediums, we didn't order a ton of those, but mediums are going fast. 2XL is going fast. We stocked up on large and extra large, so there are some of those left. But go ahead and get your t-shirt ASAP. It's the brand new 2018 Bet the Board logo t-shirt.
Yeah, support the brand. Do what you can to spread the gospel all about sports gambling and get the word out there for the kind of content we try and put out there every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday throughout the course of football season, Payne. And since we have a busy slate, feel a few minutes of intros, exchanging some pleasantries is good enough. Let's get right into the action, and we'll start with a game involving your beloved Dolphins. They'll head up to Foxborough to take on the New England Patriots, where New England is a 7-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on the game has been bet down a bit. We'll call it 48 right now. The Dolphins have lost their last 9 games at Gillette Stadium, having struggled to beat the Patriots on the road since week 2 of the 2008 season. I know there were some major detractors coming into the campaign about what Miami was going to be able to accomplish. Are you at all surprised by their 3-0 start?
I think you have to be a little bit, right? Now, I know professional bettors went over their win total. 5.5 was a little bit low, especially when you factor in everything they went through last year. You pluck a quarterback who's out of shape off a couch couple weeks before the season starts, and then you have to deal with all the things within the season. You dealt with the hurricane early on, you didn't have a bye week, you had to travel to London, and you decided not to have a bye week after that. I mean, it was just a complete mess. Everything went against them and they still win 6 games. So this isn't you know, we didn't think they'd be as bad as most projected them to be, but this is a pleasant surprise. And I think this game could be, at least what they're calling, the changing of the guard. And I think that's a little bit why I'm struggling here with this one, because you look at the spot, you look at the power number, it does favor the Patriots. But when you look at these metrics, and you look at all of the underlying factors here, it kind of points in Miami's direction, right? Like, they're a positive 0.8 yards per play through three games. New England's a negative 0.8 yards per play. You just look at anything, success rate metrics, efficiency metrics, it all points to the Dolphins. And I can tell you, just locker room speak, it's Patriots week. And it's kind of time to slay that dragon, prove that they're for real. And I, you know, who knows if it comes to fruition, but the mindset internally is, if they can beat New England here, it's going to contribute to the long-term downfall that this, you know, Brady Belichick regime's had and during this 15-year run. So it's one of those weird things where you'd look at a 3-0 team and say, hey, it could be complacent. I don't get that vibe. That's not the picture I've been painted at this point.
Well, we've definitely seen cracks in the facade of this Patriot dynasty over the last 2 weeks. It's been rare to see them lose back-to-back games, let alone by double digits. The last five times they've had a two-game losing streak, they've bounced back with double-digit victories. And we talked on Monday, this number down a little bit from where it would have been at 9.5. I've actually been surprised that there are some 6.5 starting to pop up in the market, and it appears that betting action relatively split. We know what Ryan Tannehill's been able to accomplish. So much made this offseason about Jarvis Landry leaving, but we've seen Kenny Stills, Danny Amendola, Albert Wilson, Jakeem Grant really step in and contribute. Do you worry at all, Payne, about a pass defense that surrendered 320-plus yards over the last two games, or you're not as apprehensive about it knowing that New England's really struggled to get their vertical passing game going?
You know, I wasn't a huge fan of the Dolphins' defense coming in. I have been surprised in that regard, and I think it's more about who you're facing this week. You know, it's the Patriots, it's Brady, it's Belichick, and I think there is potential for offensive explosion, but if Edelman returns 100% healthy and confident, or Josh Gordon gets his head on straight, but as it stands right now, you know, those guys are a little, you know, Edelman is not playing this week, Josh Gordon's a little bit iffy. You know, when I look at what potentially New England can do here, they've faced a below average slate of defenses, and they're averaging only 5 yards per play. That's pretty scary for me, because it's the lowest output for New England's offense since 2003. And you know, just the league is different right back then. It wasn't pass first. So averaging 5 yards per play in 2018 to me is worse than 4.9 in 2003. So I don't know if they're going to be able to expose that Dolphins defense. We're just seeing everything across the board down for the Patriots offense. 7% decrease in rushing success, 4% decrease in passing success. You know, they're struggling on the ground. They didn't resign Deion Lewis. I believe Rex Burkhead now on the IR. So, like, James White, he's not an every down runner. Sony Michel, he struggled. I think the mental aspect of the game is caught up to him just a little bit. The ground game's been just anemic. What I'm intrigued by here, I think, and, you know, there's question marks when Sue left, would they be able to stop the run? Right now, it's crazy, and I don't think this is going to continue. I really don't. But Miami's number 5 in rushing success rate defense. They're 26th last year. They're number 1 in explosive run defense. The one issue here is William Hayes is out. He is a massive loss. He's done for the season. He was a fantastic run-setting edge. He can play inside. He can play outside. Andre Branch is also out. So this means just a lot of defensive snaps for Charles Harris. He can't seem to set the edge. So I think that's tough. It looks like Rashad Jones is going to be back in that secondary. And the one thing when I looked at this game, and it's going to be fun, like, the Dolphins decided to draft guys for this specific matchup. Right, they went and got Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's this corner slash safety who can guard tight ends. You get linebacker Jerome Baker, who is he's just a speed linebacker. You would think those two are going to have their crack at Gronk here, and maybe just from what they saw in film last week, you'd think Matt Burke, Adam Gase are probably going to go to that same route. And it's just double Gronk for someone else to beat you.
I'm curious to see. I mean, you mentioned it, and we always talk about Patriots inflation taking hold in the market. It's obviously factored in, and I think it has to. When you look at it and go, all right, if I took the Patriots names off their helmets and jerseys, would this number be as strong as it is? Tom Brady still is Tom Brady, but right now, through at least 3 weeks, quarterback rating has him 20th in the league at 93.9. One thing I did want to ask you, though, Payne, about this rivalry before we close the book on this particular matchup. Over the last 10 meetings, we've seen the road team only cover once. How real is it when you talk about the difficulty that New England has coming down to South Beach to take on the Dolphins and vice versa when Miami has to travel north to go to Gillette?
Well, yeah, it's twofold, right? I mean, Tom Brady hasn't been very good. You get the Boston team playing in humid weather, so not ideal there. And then Gillette Stadium, one of the toughest home field advantages in the NFL. And what it seems like is the Dolphins start pretty well, but they don't have the second half game plan. And I've always been told you need two game plans to go against Bill Belichick because the adjustments at halftime are just ridiculous. Maybe here we see this Dolphins offense. They can be competent for a full game, have had some success at Gillette in the first half, but haven't been able just to kind of keep that consistency through four quarters. And just when you just break down the tape a little bit, it's like this Patriots defense right now is struggling with speed, and the Dolphins have plenty of it with Grant Wilson, Drake. We've really yet to see Devontae Parker contribute. I think he'll have a little larger role here as the broken finger starts to get a little healthier. The one thing the Patriots defense does get back for them is Trey Flowers. He is their best defender. It also looks like Patrick Chung could be back as well. Practiced yesterday on Wednesday. So that would be two big get backs for the Patriots defense.
It should be an interesting game. As you mentioned, a Miami win would really be symbolic of a changing of the guard as the Dolphins could move to a full three games lead over the mighty New England Patriots, who came into the season as massive favorites to repeat yet again as AFC East champions. To Atlanta, where it's the Falcons, a 5-point favorite total in this game, 52.5 at betonline.ag as they play host to the Bengals. First meeting, Payne, for these teams since 2014. They only play once every 4 years or so, it seems. But I have to ask, when you look at the Atlanta Falcons, we knew their defense was already dealing with cluster injuries. They lose Ricardo Allen. I mean, how do we begin to grade out the expectations for the stop unit for the Falcons and the amount of stress now placed on their offense to score, and you know what? Score a little bit more.
It's a bad defense. There's nothing else that can be said about it. And you have cluster injuries in the back. It's really just the middle of your defense at linebacker and safety. So teams are just feasting in the middle. Now, you do get a Cincy offense that's kind of limping in here, right? You know, you don't have your starting center. Joe Mixon hasn't practiced yet this week. I know some sites had him listed as out. Some thought he could potentially come back. But you do have Giovanni Bernard, I guess, to kind of fill that role. He took on an increased snap share, 88% last week. Went into the Carolina game with a knee injury, came out with a thigh problem. So he's been limited this week. And because of those issues that you mentioned on that Atlanta defense up the middle, you would think if he can gut it out, that's a huge help. Because right now, running backs against Atlanta, 167 scrimmage yards per game right now.
I'd say that's a pretty high level of productivity.
Yeah, I mean, they cannot stop running backs. 30th in NFL in explosive runs. So it would be a big loss if Giovanni Bernard isn't 100%. And I mentioned other guys limping in here. A.J. Green, he's not going to miss, but it doesn't sound like he's going to be 100% either. You'd hope John Ross could step up. There was a not-so-subtle message delivered to him by Green and Boyd this week. Basically said, hey, he needs to learn how to compete. He flat-out quit, didn't battle on two of Dalton's interceptions last week, ran the wrong route in another. I mean, there is a reason John Ross was a healthy scratch towards the end of last season. He just couldn't get the and I'm going to put this nicely, the mental aspect of the game. It doesn't matter, though. It doesn't seem to, and this is why this total's gone through the roof. Whatever the Falcons' defense is doing right now, it's just not going to work, right? You're looking at a defense 23rd or worse in both rushing and passing success rate defense. I don't see how it improves here. And then you think about what Cincinnati could do offensively and how they're going to position this. When you have backup linebackers, when you have backup safeties, they're going to be out of position, and play action's only going to intensify that, I would think. And when you look at how Andy Dalton's performing this season, his completion percentage is up 14%. His passer rating is 20 points higher on plays that have a play fake element to them, whether it's like the quick RPO or the elongated play action pass. If you can get him in the play action game, I think it's really going to hurt this Falcons defense, who's just got a lot of backups in there right now.
When we look at the other side of the ball, we know Atlanta has dynamic playmakers. Calvin Ridley kind of burst onto the scene a little bit faster than I would have anticipated. Julio Jones, always a nightmare problem. We're not quite sure what the running back situation will look like in Atlanta. But Matt Ryan put up a massive number in the Saints, albeit in a loss last weekend. Where does Atlanta look to go to try and attack this Bengals defense, which struggled for long stretches last weekend for their trip to Charlotte?
Well, it's a short sample, but the one thing that's a positive is they're at home. And it's just been a better offense at home on that carpet, about a yard per play better when they're in their own building. You mentioned Calvin Ridley. He's had a huge breakout game. I think he's a nice complement to Julio Jones. If he shows that ability, then you're not going to be able to double Julio. He's still dealing with the nagging calf injury a little bit. He's going to play, obviously. But when you even look at some of these numbers, Philly, they had the horrific opener against Philly, but the offense has settled in just a little bit, 51% of passer grading successful. The last 2 weeks, because of Calvin Ridley, we've seen 11 explosive plays on the offense, so they're trending in the right direction after a bad week one performance. I don't want to suggest handing the ball off here 50 times, but, you know, that Cincy defense has struggled to stop the run. I think if you can run the ball here, it's not only going to help your offense in the play action game, but it's also going to help your defense, right? It's going to keep them on the sidelines a little bit. 51% of runs have graded successful against Cincy. That's third worst in the NFL. Now, I am not sure Devontae Freeman's going to play. He's supposedly getting closer. He went through some walkthroughs yesterday. They're calling him day to day. I think it would be a surprise if he played this weekend, but it would certainly be a nice bonus, because I'm not sure Tevin Coleman's that due to that every down between the tackles runner. Ito Smith's kind of lifted the load off his shoulders a little bit, but if you can get the ground game going, McCaffrey had a field day last week, I think that really helps out your defense as well this week.
When you look at the Bengals, and one last thing on their defense, Terrell Austin has come out and said, we know we have to address our third down defense. The Bengals allowing their opposition to a 52% success rate, which has them last in the league. What I find interesting here, and Payne maybe a little bit more troublesome, the Bengals rank fourth in the NFL in fewest average yards allowed on first downs. They still can't get off the field on third down. And right now, the Bengals, only three games, are on pace to run 229 fewer offensive plays than their opponents. How big a concern is their inability to stop these drives and get the ball back in Andy Dalton's hands?
Yeah, obviously you want to get off the field on third down, especially as you pointed out, when you're getting the offense behind the chains, you would expect third and longs aren't going to be completed. And that's really odd when you look at some of the metrics. They've been pretty good in pass success rate defense. I like the three corners they're trotting out there. Maybe it's a little bit of an anomaly, only a three-game sample, but they're going to have to absolutely get off the field here, I would think, on third downs, or this Falcons offense is just going to continue to hum.
Yeah, they'll have plenty of chances in a game that should be great for fantasy players. So if you have any members of the Bengals and Falcons, probably a good idea to get those folks into the lineup for the early kickoff down there at the Mercedes-Benz Dome. Payne, we'll go out west for a game between the Raiders and Browns. And I can't believe we're talking about yet another Browns game on this Bet the Board podcast. But it's Oakland Raiders, a 3-point favorite. Total on this game, 45 at betonline.ag. Baker mania hype poised to reach a crescendo in this particular spot. Hugh Jackson, a homecoming of sorts. And I had to dig into this because I didn't quite realize that Hugh and John Gruden have known each other for so long. They first met when Pacific was playing Division I football about 15, 20, 25, 30. I don't even know how many years ago.
That's probably why you've seen this total tick down a little bit. You mentioned you threw a jab at the Browns here. I feel like...
When can I not throw? I mean, they have one win in 635 days. You bet your ass I'm going to keep throwing jabs until they prove to me that they can win consistently for the amount of money they cost us on this damn podcast last year.
Well, here's what's interesting. I think people gravitate towards the lovable loser a little bit here. And so it's been fun to monitor them, especially with the first overall pick in Baker Mayfield. And then you had, obviously, Hard Knocks. So I think they've become a team that... casual fans are gravitating towards just a little bit.
I have to ask this. When it comes to Cleveland and some of the hype there, did you have to make an adjustment to their power number when they switched from Tyrod over to Baker Mayfield?
I haven't made a massive one, no. I have upgraded just a touch, and I mean barely any. And I think when you just look at this spot, right, the best attributes to me about Baker Mayfield are his confidence, you know, the attitude, the way he prepares with extra time. That tells me that maybe this spot isn't going to be too overwhelming for him. You know, it is obviously the first start on the road in the black hole. He's going to be facing a defense that's prepared for him on a normal length week, right? I think that's a factor here. The Jets didn't game plan for Baker Mayfield, especially on the short week. And I think the Raiders defense is pretty well rested here. They only played 38 snaps last week. But, you know, I think you have to wonder how you're going to get pressure on Baker Mayfield. I'd envision, you know, there's going to be a lot of quick throws here. As bad as that Oakland pass rush is, dead last in adjusted sack rate, the Browns' offensive line hasn't been good in pass protection. Fourth worst. So that's going to be a battle there to see which inept unit can win that battle, and I think it could go a long way. I'm intrigued to see what the Browns' game plan looks like because you know, have this Oakland defense right now. They can't stop the run. They're allowing 5.1 yards per attempt, fourth worst in the NFL, 50% of runs have graded successful. So I would think against that Raiders defense, on the road, rookie quarterback, first start, it's going to be a game where you try to get Hyde, Chubb, and Duke going a little bit as well.
Coincidence or concern when you look at the Raiders, Payne? They're sixth in the league in total offense, but they've been outscored 37-3 in the fourth quarter. It appears week in, week out, Derek Carr is making critical mistakes. You look at some of these numbers, 5 interceptions has him tied for most in the NFL. He was picked off in the end zone late in the fourth quarter last week against the Dolphins when the Raiders were down by 4 points. And while his completion percentage sits at 77% and he's got 300 plus yards per game, his touchdown interception ratio is still just a paltry 2-5. I mean, what have you seen from Carr that either goes, all right, this is just a blip, or it's something more that they have to dive into and uncover? Because John Gruden has done nothing but heap praise on Carr despite the results not being there in crunch time.
So this is a really tough team to gauge, right? Because Oakland right now is the only team in the NFL to lead for every single snap through the first 3 quarters this season. Yet they're 0-3. And it basically comes down to Gruden not planning properly, right? Like, he made moves this offseason more than any other team, and he built the oldest roster in the NFL. So, you know, when Gruden decided to go this route, he probably had a brain fart because he didn't factor in playing in altitude, playing in humidity. You know, prior proper planning here probably would have solved some of these issues. Now, I don't want to bag on Gruden too much because the metrics have looked good, as you alluded to, and that's despite Carr not being great so far. 52% of runs have graded successful. They're second in passing success rate. They're sixth in explosive passing. The scripts, they look pretty good. Like, it's clear Gruden's busting his nuts here and putting in the man hours. And quite frankly, they mauled the Dolphins last week. If you remove the noise of the kneel downs from the equation, the Raiders had 36 more offensive snaps than Miami. You know, this is a tough task this week, though. And you look at the Browns defense, it's above average in both rushing and passing success rates. They've allowed only 5 yards per play. That's sixth best. And they've had extra time to prepare. They're going to get two guys back on the defense that are key cogs as well, right? They're going to get back Christian Kirksey, their middle linebacker. They're going to get back Emmanuel Ogba, another pass rusher on the defensive line. So, you know, the Raiders, I think, are going to have to come out early here, apply some pressure, force Baker to throw in known passing situations. And if that script is good early, like we've seen, maybe that's the case.
I had no idea when we looked at the schedule and the way things rolled out that a week 4 matchup between the Raiders and Browns, not only would the Browns have a better record than Oakland, but we'd be talking about all the intrigue here with Baker getting a start. I think a lot sooner than I anticipated, and there may be folks out there who disagree, but should be a fun team to watch and keep tabs on going forward. We know that, you know, you read players' comments and quotes. Jarvis Landry says all the right things about Baker's a guy that's got the locker room there, and while he's got the bravado, his track record is of backing it up and performing with a chip on his shoulder, even in an orthodox manner, so to speak. So from the youth that we'll see on display in Oakland to veteran leadership and presence at MetLife Stadium, where we look at this number, Payne, And it's the New Orleans Saints, a 3.5-point favorite on the road at the Giants. Total in this game has been bet up into the low 50s at betonline.ag. And I guess the first thing I have to ask you, with the Saints' frailties as a defense, is there enough firepower offensively for anyone to consider or feel comfortable laying points with them on a road, especially over a field goal?
Probably not. Now, they're doing a decent job stopping the run, the Saints' defense is, but the rest, eh. You know, it's tough to lay points on the road. Huge win last week, obviously, a division game. They played the extra stanza. Now they're on the road again. When I look at the Giants' offense and if they have an ability to attack some of these weaknesses, you know, we'll see. You know, the quarterback isn't very good. And I hate to keep bagging on Eli, but that's kind of the situation right now. The offensive line isn't as improved as I thought it would be when you spend big on Nate Solder. They draft Willie Hernandez early as well, but that unit's been brutal. And then you're learning a new system on top of that. So I don't think it's just one thing where you can pinpoint and be like, hey, it's Eli, hey, it's the offensive line, it's the system, yada, yada, yada. You lost your starting center. That was a big loss. John Greco was filling in for him. He was horrific against Jacksonville. Serviceable last week against the Texans. I know they hung some points, but overall, like top to bottom, with that amount of talent the Giants have, it's just not good enough. 31st in rushing success, 25th in passing success. You are getting some explosive passes thanks to just this ridiculous array of weapons. But you would think, you know, the Giants are going to have some opportunities here in this one. That Saints defense, dead last in the NFL. They're allowing nearly 11 yards per pass attempt. That's 2.5 yards worse than the second worst team in the NFL. And so 30th in explosive pass defense. Now they're down, you know, Patrick Robinson. He's an average corner, but there's no one really that's better than him alongside Marshawn Lattimore. So that's going to be a big loss. I'm not sure Ken Crowley's that dude. If the Giants offensive line can give Eli some time, anytime, there are plays to be had. The O-line is obviously struggling. 25 in adjusted line yards, worse than that in sack rate. It's just a bad combination going on right now for that Giants offensive line.
What has changed for the Saints? I mean, they were a defense that was on the up and coming last year. We saw them struggle early in the season, but for a large stretches, I mean, they were very good. We know that they dropped off a little bit towards the tail end of last year. But to your eye, who watches these games as intently as anybody, what have you seen to contribute to the Saints' demise? They're starting to look like the Saints' defenses we grew accustomed to in like 2012.
Couldn't tell you. Honestly, couldn't tell you. Now, it looks like they're having issues in the secondary. Marshawn Lattimore took a step back. You don't have a second corner. That seems to be the case right now. They're stopping the run pretty well. But it's like they got attacked by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and now everyone has the game plan. Now, they've faced a pretty tough schedule of opponent offenses. I think that plays a little bit of a role here, and this is a little bit of a downgrade, I would think, in offenses they're going to face. So it's a combination of teams figuring out how to attack them early, kind of mirroring that Buccaneers game plan, and it's just been a tough schedule of opponent offenses as well.
When we look at the Giants' defense and try and figure out how they're going to be able to at least contain or slow down Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas, what do we make of the stop unit's ability, since those two playmakers as dynamic as anyone, but when you look at the Saints' overall depth, it doesn't feel after those guys there are any other game breakers on the offense, despite Cam Meredith finally getting into the act in a very important touchdown last weekend against the Falcons.
Yeah, when you look at the matchup, I think it's clear the Giants need Olivier Vernon back, and even Eli Apple. And I think we'll have more information there the next few days. Vernon did do individual drills on Wednesday. Eli Apple did not, kind of worked off to the side with trainers. I didn't think I'd ever say this, but it's clear the Giants miss Eli Apple. And, you know, B.W. Webb isn't a starting outside corner. And when you look at the passing success rate metrics, they don't look horrible, right? The Giants have allowed 44% of passes to grade successful, but it's, you know, just against a well below average slate of passing attacks. You know, Dak, Bortles, a less than 100% Deshaun Watson. The Giants defense has given up 10 explosive passes in three games. They're 24th in overall defensive efficiency. And when you look at what the Saints are bringing, I don't care who they've played against defensively. At age 39, it's impressive. Breeze is completing 81% of his passes right now. And
he's been good, man. He's been real good.
Nuts. It's a one-dimensional offense, too. Like, you don't have all your weapons. 63% of passes have graded successful. Like, no other team in the league is even in the 60% range. And I know the ground game improved a little bit against Atlanta. I think that's more a byproduct of the Falcons just being poor defensively. Situationally, the Saints have been okay rushing. Tied for 23rd, though, in NFL at 3.9 yards per attempt. So we talked about, and you mentioned Cam Meredith. This offense, it needs a presence of a slot receiver. He did get 36 snaps against Atlanta. Crucial touchdown late in the game. That was big for us. But I just, you got to figure out if that knee's going to hold up. Been limited at practice this week. So I don't know what we're going to get from the Saints offense here. Certainly it's potent. Certainly the Giants, if they're without Vernon and Eli Apple again, that could spell some trouble. But the Saints are missing some weapons here.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, too. This will also be New Orleans' first game outdoors so far this season after playing two home games to kick things off, played in familiar surroundings inside against Atlanta. You wonder, maybe you get some swirling winds. We'll see how Drew Brees' aging arm holds up. But, Payne, I do have an important question. I mean, I know we've started the season very well. Are you building an addition over there on your estate that I hear going on in the background? I hear a little bit. I feel like, you know, there's some workers there. Maybe you're adding like a 2,000 square foot addition, maybe a pool. I'm not quite sure, you know, what you're trying to put on the house over there.
The kitchen's going on right now. And
the kitchen. Wait a second. South Florida. Wait, hold on. Let me stop this here. The kitchen. There's no way. Our listeners have listened to you for what? We've done this for 5 years. Like, are you going to try and tell us there that you have a cooking hobby or that you actually spend a lot of time in there when you're not handicapping football or basketball or all the other sports you go after?
Not a big cooker. No, that's for sure. But the kitchen's going on right now. And, you know, when you're in South Florida, people operate at just a little different speed. And so they haven't been here for a week. And some of the things that they ordered came damaged. There wasn't a couple cabinet doors. Now, I wouldn't think cabinet doors are going to slow down the entire process of the kitchen, but apparently that's the case, and that's what's going on right now. Just banging galore. So hopefully our editor, he's going to be worth his weight in gold today, editing this this nonsense out.
All right, I just wanted to check because I was getting a little bit concerned. I mean, as our listeners hear and they go, what the hell's going on? Maybe somebody was breaking in. You know, we just want to make sure that your safety is priority number one around here, Payne, because everyone who listens to this podcast knows damn well you are the one that has to carry me. It's not the other way around.
I appreciate that. What a nice guy. Flooding compliments recently. What's going on? You know what did I do to deserve this?
I do what I can. You pick enough winners, you get compliments heaped on. You go through a stretch where you're not picking winners, I'm going to feed you to the wolves. It's simple as that.
There you go.
All right. From Sunday afternoon into a Sunday night game that's been a fixture in prime time, at least as long as Big Ben has been the starting quarterback in Pittsburgh, it's the Steelers, a 3.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Number is trending towards 3 with one of the largest totals we've seen in this rivalry against the Baltimore Ravens at 51. It's actually the highest total in this series over the last 10 games. And Payne, last time these two teams got together, Big Ben chucked it around 66 times in a 39-38 thriller. I'm not even sure how we go about trying to find the most important handicapping element for two teams that know each other so well and, quite frankly, have a great mutual respect for one another.
Yeah. You know, I think when you're looking at the Steelers' offense, that's what this team is going to live and die on right now. And, my goodness, that is annoying. they're gonna get both DeCastro and Gilbert back. It looks like they were full participants at Wednesday's practice. They're both quoted as saying pretty optimistic. So, and Gilbert probably could have played on Monday night, but he said like there was this massive rainstorm before the game. It didn't allow him to warm up, so he couldn't test it. And the Steelers felt, hey, it was just kind of best to sit. So you get two starting offensive linemen back for the Steelers. That's huge. You know, as much as we like James Conner, great person. He's been very good catching the ball. But Le'Veon Bell is missed between the tackles right now. You look at Pittsburgh, 22nd in rushing success rate. That's 3% below last season. And it's more telling because the opposing ground defenses they've faced are below average. And so Pittsburgh's also below average in explosive runs. We're just not getting a lot out of the ground game right now for the Steelers offense. You'd hope two starting offensive linemen back, you see a boost here, but you're going up against a Ravens defense that's been outstanding right now.
What do you make? I mean, and I guess I've been surprised. I don't want to put words in your mouth of Juju Smith-Schuster really emerging as an outstanding complement opposite Antonio Brown. Did you think he was going to be capable of doing this, whether it's with Big Ben or his skill set was going to allow for him to really emerge as maybe one of the top number two receivers in the entire league?
Well, I think that's the emphasis on number two receiver, right? Antonio Brown gets a lot of attention. Big Brown gets a lot of attention. They're doing a great job with how they're using him, though. He's operating out of the slot and just tearing it up right now. Number one in slot yards run after the catch. So he's been vital in that regard. And, you know, you could have some matchup advantages here for the offense. Now, for me, when I look at the Ravens defense, you look at some of the metrics, 37% of passes are grading successful. That's number one in the NFL. They're also number one in explosive pass defense. And this is all without Jimmy Smith. Now, to me, my eyes don't tell me it's that good visually, okay? And I think part of it is the schedule of passing offenses they've faced. To date, it's been one of the easiest schedules. Josh Allen, Case Keenum, Andy Dalton. It's going to be a much tougher task this week. Now, the positive looks like C.J. Mosley and Michael Pierce, they both practiced on a limited basis Wednesday, so good sign there. Obviously, Thursday and Friday is huge in the injury world, so you're going to want to monitor that. If you can practice Thursday or Friday, it's a great sign for going on Sunday.
Can Mike Tomlin tighten up what the Steelers aren't showing, and that's basically playing an undisciplined brand of football even by their standards? I mean, they're dead last in the league in penalty yards per game, dead last by almost three penalties and penalties taken against them. I mean, are these the kind of things that are ultimately going to be their undoing that could happen as early as Sunday night, despite everyone thinking that all is well in the Steel City as they evened up their record to 1-1-1?
So a couple things here. And this isn't to pat ourselves on the back, but we might as well. When we talked and broke down Monday Night Football, the Steelers' defense is certainly incompetent. There's not a ton of talent there. We talked about the positions T.J. Watt is being put in, right, guarding, you know, wide receivers and tight ends and things of that nature. And there's not a ton of talent. There's issues in the secondary. Joe Hayden at this point, very frail. So there's issues there, but I had mentioned that this defense was undisciplined. I had mentioned Mike Tomlin was an absolute abortion, not putting guys in positions to succeed, constantly out of position. And then I saw a show this week, and James Harrison was on it. I believe it's called Lock It In. And James Harrison came out and said, listen, Mike Tomlin doesn't put these guys in position to succeed. So it's just the level of information this podcast gets that we're saying it before James Harrison, a guy who's been in that locker room for a decade. And so that's the issue here. And I don't think it's going to get fixed immediately because Mike Tomlin's an absolute bust. But you do get a Baltimore offense here that isn't great. Only 5 yards per play, 16th in rushing success, 19th in passing success, dead last in explosive runs. It's ugly right now for this Ravens offense.
Speaking of which, for James Harrison, I love how he comes out too, and he had another very interesting comment saying that Le'Veon Bell should go back to the Steelers, he should sign his franchise tender, and then fake an injury. So he's had a pretty busy week in terms of breaking down the Steelers, not only in anticipation of that Monday night game, but also his feelings towards the organization and Bell as a whole.
That statement a little less informative, I would think. I mean, you can get injured at practice. I think the organization would probably catch on, right? He's practicing, looks 100%, and then bails on the game. I don't know if that strategy would quite work.
Yeah, you never know. Everyone's always a little bit creative to trying to think out the box, looking to try and get their payday.
If he was a baseball player, though, those takes are good. 1 for 2. That's a good percentage.
How short the lifespan can be of professional football players, especially at the running back position. But there is still one more game to get to, and we'll do that in just a few minutes. It's Thursday. It's time to bring in Dave Mason from betonline.ag. You can, of course, follow Dave on Twitter at DaveMasonBOL. And Dave, I have to imagine last Sunday night's result between the Detroit Lions and the New England Patriots is one that'll go down in the BetOnline record books.
Yeah, it was great. I think it was last week or the week before, we were talking about how a Sunday night game can just make or break your week, and that was the prime example. It was the biggest decision in the history of BetOnline. We had a great day going into the Sunday night game. But that there was so much action on the game as the big, like I said, the biggest decision ever, not only spread, but parlays and teasers, but the biggest teaser win in the history of BetOnline regular season. Let me say that regular season. So it was a great day, great result on that Sunday night. them winning outright just killed every teaser out there. The players did have some good wins Sunday. Rams, Monday night, speaking of record setting, they had the biggest, the Steelers Bucks over was the biggest regular season total decision ever, and players won it. And players also won the Chiefs. We won the Patriots every which way, or, you know, the Patriots game lines, actually. Bills was big for us, and Titans was huge as well. So, all in all, great weekend.
All right, well, I'm glad the players at least got something back. I didn't want you to dance on everyone's grave here on the podcast and gloat about a massive weekend for the house.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, it's overdue. I mean, anybody that listens to this podcast over the years have heard my fair share of whining, and it seems like every week I've been whining, but it's been a good start for the NFL season for the house, no doubt. The action's still great, and the players are overdue. That's what I was telling our guys the other day. I mean, we're overdue for just one of those weekends where we're bleeding, so maybe this weekend.
Dave, when we look at this weekend, how is it shaping up so far in terms of sharp action? Anything coming in yet?
Yes, sir. Rams tonight sharp. They're up to 7.5-point favorites. Over tonight, 48.5 was a sharp number, up to 49 over -116. Eagles -3.5, they're -4. Bengals over 48.5, they're all the way up to 52.5. Public, yeah, lots of sweats again this weekend. Colts 70%, Bengals 67%, Lions 71%. Eagles 81%, Seattle 79%, San Diego 75%, Saints 75%, and the big one will be that Chiefs-Denver game, 81% of early actions on the Chiefs. And even though it's one of the later games, the latest game, there's more action on that game than any other game, excluding tonight's matchup.
Dave, any chance that the Monday night game between the Chiefs and Broncos gets to Patriots-Lions territory on Sunday night, knowing it's a standalone game on a Monday instead of a Sunday?
I think spread-wise, yeah. I think spread-wise, yeah. I don't think it's going to have that effect on teasers as much, just because, you know, that Patriots game was, what, the 6.5, around 7, so that was more that – the numbers that everybody teases, you know, that's when they're 6.5 to 8 points or up to 9 points. People love teasing those. So I don't think they'll have the impact teaser-wise, but spread-wise, I really think we can get up to the exposure we had last Sunday night.
Always crazy to kind of see. I know you guys have moved MVP odds quite a bit. Patrick Mahomes now the odds on favorite, so it would make sense that folks rallying to the window to try and back Kansas City in a primetime spot. But, Dave, for players that may have gotten carved up a little bit last weekend or may want to get involved with betonline.ag for the first time, what kind of promotions will they find available at the shop?
Yes, sir. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, sign up for one. Use promo code 75BTB for 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and have not taken advantage of the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
He's with us every single Wednesday throughout the college football season to break down liabilities in the amateur ranks. He joins us every single Thursday to talk all things professional football. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, can't thank you enough for all the great insight. Best of luck this weekend, and we can only hope that all the results work out the way you guys envision.
Yeah, if not, you'll hear me whine. I know you guys want to hear me whine. I just know it. So maybe next week I'll whine.
Yeah, we are long overdue for a rant. So maybe this time next week we'll get the first one of the 2018 season.
God, well, I rant enough, but not about this. So, well, yeah, absolutely. Maybe I'll rant next week and whine. All right, fellas.
Man, Payne, you have to think after a weekend like that, Dave should be in the boss's office going, damn it, I want a bonus if we're going to continue to collect figures like this and get all those parlays to go down, money lines, you name it, everything I'm sure that was tied into the Lions had to be a great weekend for those guys.
He could use an agent probably, I would think. But yes, massive. And he didn't even dig it into the folks. He didn't even give them the gut punch. They were sloppy pigs. They got the under in that game too.
Yeah, I mean, it was everything worked out the way of the house, but we've seen it before. September typically has been a good month for those folks that gravitate towards underdogs. We've seen 3 double-digit dogs now, I believe, Payne, that have won games outright. So parity reigns supreme in September, and then as we get deeper into October, November, you start to see the cream separate a little bit, and it changes the dynamic quite a bit, which leads us to what I think is, or at least was going to be, the marquee game of the weekend. Now, it did lose a little bit of its luster given Minnesota falling flat on its face last weekend against Buffalo. But it's the Los Angeles Rams, 7-point favorites, total in this game 49 at betonline.ag, playing host to the Vikings on a short week, long travel, bounce back scenario, and a little bit of revenge. It was a game we actually were on the Vikings a season ago, 24-7 in Minnesota's victory. I'll ask you this, Payne, and I know it's speaking in hyperbole, but are the Rams the best and most complete team in the NFL right now?
I would think if they're healthy. You know, they're not 100% healthy right now, especially in the secondary. But I know you're going to be rooting against them. I know you got a fantasy monster brewing, and you got Todd Gurley, and there's potential if the Rams continue this streak, he could be sitting out the last few weeks of the season, or at least have a completely limited role there as he gets saved for the playoff run.
I may need to be looking to try and trade him by like week 9. I mean, the Rams last check at betonline.ag were a 1-15 favorite to wrap up the West. I don't think I've seen numbers that high this early in the season, even during the Patriots heyday when they were crushing the souls of the Dolphins, the Jets, and the Bills.
Crushing the souls. That's funny, and it's probably an inside joke that you don't know, because I don't know if you watch 60 Minutes or not, but there was this
episode. How old are you? 75 years old?
There was an episode about a poor community and how chess has brought the community together. And there's this young, like 13-year-old chubby kid, and they talk to him about being a good chess player. And he just says, I love crushing people's souls. It was the funniest thing ever. But, you know, McVay's just ahead of his time right now. And I didn't plan on saying this, but I managed to sneak onto the Rams conference call this week. And
great. I'm glad you threw that out there now, so your access will be restricted going forward.
And it just confirms, like, everything that we've been saying. Like, McVay is just miles ahead of everyone right now. It's scary. The game plans are ridiculous. It's about, you know, kind of scheming for opponent weaknesses. You look at his offense, and I know we kind of talked off air a little bit about the team total. They put up 30 points or more in 11 of his 19 games as head coach. And, you know, he just kind of spilled the beans this week and said he just puts trust in his guys to go to work. And we've been saying this for a long time now. When you hire Wade Phillips, like, I don't think a lot of young guys would have done that. They probably would have felt intimidated bringing in this veteran head coach, former head coach. Like, not McVay. He just doesn't worry about stuff like that. He just worries about the offense. Let's Wade do his thing with the defense. And the one topic that came up that caught my attention was Dirk Cutter. Right after Dirk Cutter basically just like threw up all over himself in front of a national audience on Monday Night Football, McVay came out and was like, listen, you know, we hired a clock management specialist. His name's Jed Fish. And he just focuses on communicating like all the critical game day situations to me. It's too much to handle when I'm calling the plays, McVay said. So like less than half the NFL teams have a guy doing that, as crazy as it sounds. And so you're seeing just like these blunders that, you know, like 13-year-old kids playing Madden can execute. And it just seems to be like nuclear physics to like these multi-million dollar coaches and billion dollar organizations. But McVay is just ahead of his time there. Well, that was my McVay rant. I don't know how that played into this game, but that's where we are right now.
Yeah, we'll get back to the game, I'm sure, in some capacity, 37 minutes later. But I think what you talk about, I mean, that's a valuable life lesson, honestly. Surround yourself with good people. I mean, the sign of weak leadership is getting yes men or people that you know you're smarter than. That does you no good, whether it's in handicapping, whether it's in coaching, whether it's as a CEO of a business. You need people to challenge you and people that you can trust to try and do that. And I think that's why the Rams have benefited immensely. McVay's able to focus on his area of expertise. He's deferred to Phillips, as you mentioned, on the defensive side. But I do have to ask, how big a hit does the defense take with Aqib Talib going to IR? We're not sure, even if Marcus Peters goes tonight, if he's going to be anywhere close to 100%. And you look at the drop-off to Sam Shields, Troy Hill, Roby Coleman. I mean, do you get at all concerned about that Rams back of the defense without their superstars, even knowing that they should be able to provide an interior pass rush with Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald against a Vikings offensive line that was nothing short of horrific last weekend against Buffalo?
Oh, you have to be, right? And there's some concerns at linebacker, too. And as great as the defense is with Wade Phillips, and that defensive line is just outstanding, you know, it's kind of a thin unit, you know? And when you look at this matchup a little bit, you know, they're not going to be tasked, I wouldn't think, with this, you know, overly difficult task. You know, the Vikings can't run right now. I think we were a little stunned last year that they could run the ball a little bit with that offensive line. But, you know, John DeFilippo isn't getting the same production Pat Shurmur got. So they're going to face probably a one-dimensional Vikings offense here. When you look at the landscape here, Minnesota, 30th in rushing success rate, 3.5 yards per rush attempt. You bring in Kirk Cousins. I know you're a little down on him. I was probably a little too high. But when you have dynamic weapons like Diggs and Thielen on the outside, Minnesota has just 10 total explosive plays in three games. That's not good. And then you look, Riley Reiff, the left tackle, hasn't practiced yet this week with the foot injury. He battled through it against Buffalo, but didn't play well at all. If he can't go against the Rams' defensive front, that could be trouble. So it's going to be a game within the game, right? Because I think when you look at Kirk Cousins, it's going to be get the ball out quick, and maybe you can do that against the secondary, who might be playing off just a little bit with those injuries. And you just look, 40% of Cousins' dropbacks right now, he's been pressured. If Riley Reiff doesn't go, that's going to be interesting. One thing that I will note about this game, and it's kind of, again, going off into left field here, but I think it's something to monitor. I know we've seen the money come in on the Rams, and in terms of distance travel, this is the third longest trip since 2012 for a road team on a short week. So the Vikings are really up against it. Now, Mike Zimmer had the guys leave a day early, and Zimmer claims that like the Vikings organization has done a long study about short week preparation, and their data suggests, you know, leaving a day early works best. We saw the same approach a season ago when they had to trek to London and they won by 17. So I'm not saying that happens here, but maybe there's a less edge that we create for home field on these short weeks.
What do you make of the relationship between McVay and Cousins? I mean, McVay obviously worked with him very closely, came out this week, says he can make every single throw. I think he has the ability to speed it up with excellent twitch. He can change the launch point, so you're not limited in any way that you can utilize him. And I couldn't be happier for Kirk, and I'll be rooting for him for the rest of the year after Thursday night. We saw Shanahan, who knew Cousins. He wasn't able to do what he needed to get the win for the 49ers week one, but I think there was a real talent deficiency there. McVay, we know how smart he is offensively. Can he get inside the head of Kirk Cousins and take away what Cousins does best?
Listen, these are the matchups that we look for in these games. There's only 32 of these NFL head coaching jobs in the world, and there's billions of people on the planet. So you're going to have this overlap. If you can find them, it's certainly significant. As good as McVay is, you know he knows Cousins' tendencies. You know what he likes to do, what he doesn't like to do, and that's all going to get sent back to Wade Phillips. The question becomes is, can you execute it now without a lot of guys on the secondary with that lackluster linebacking group? It's going to be all about the Rams' defensive front. If they can get pressure, the Rams' defense is going to have a decent night. If they can't, and even if it's just like a stalemate or a slight win for that defensive line, I think the Vikings are going to have some opportunity in the pass game.
Are you surprised with the line movement we've seen in this game from 7-0 in the open down to 6.5, getting as high as 7.5 in buyback? I mean, is that indicative of just difference of opinions for people thinking the Vikings will bounce back and some folks not exactly having the Rams power rating correctly pegged with some of those injuries?
So initially, you know, and this is probably a good rule of thumb. I know everyone likes to play the buy low, sell high game, you know, that's a great handicapping tactic, but it's not everything, right? There's other factors that get involved in these games. And so, you know, there's a lot of people talking about, oh, I love the Vikings at 6.5 just because it should have been this last week. And it's certainly something to consider. But once you blow through the 7, there's some significant sharp money on the Rams at this point. And now we might have a difference of opinion. There could certainly be another group that's respected that says, hey, just a value bet here now that I can get the hook. That's certainly a possibility. And maybe I would be in that camp. I don't know what the Vikings defense is right now either. That's starting to scare me a little bit, that side of the ball.
I mean, we haven't even talked about it. The absence of Everson Griffin and that distraction, you obviously hope when players like that have off-field situations, they get those rectified first. But not having his on-field contributions, I mean, that's a big loss.
Yeah. And, you know, when you look at what the Rams are doing offensively, early on, we said, hey, they might struggle. Nobody played in the preseason. Nobody literally did anything. And here the Rams find themselves number one in rushing success rate, number four in passing success rate, number one in explosive passes. You know, it's just ridiculous. Jared Goff through 3 weeks, I think he looks improved. Not being asked to do a ton right? He's like quarterback number 31, I believe, in deep passes attempted. He has an offensive line that's protecting him, treating him like the greatest commodity on earth. He's been pressured on just 22% of his dropbacks. The only other quarterback with enough qualifying snaps that's been pressured less is Ryan Tannehill. You mentioned Everson Griffin out. Tom Johnson, the defensive tackle, did travel but is questionable. That would be a good get back for the Vikings defense. But this is a tough challenge here, I think, for the Vikings. The offense that the the Rams offense, they have faced a light schedule, so maybe that's helped them. Maybe we see the Vikings present a different challenge for them, right? I mean, they faced the Raiders defense, the Chargers defense. That's 31st and 26th in defensive efficiency. The Cardinals defense, they're 20th in yards per play allowed. They're having issues negating explosive plays. So I think we're going to get a better indicator here of the Rams offense. Now, we know they're good, but how good? So, this is a better Vikings defense, and they haven't really faced a great defense to date. So I think we'll find out a little bit more here.
Yeah, should be a great game. One of the best Thursday night games we may have on the schedule. You obviously had hoped that the Vikings could have come into this game undefeated. Curious to see how they bounce back in this particular spot, but plenty of things to think about before you walk to the window and make a wager to start off your NFL Week 4. Payne, as far as best bets are concerned, we went through the slate. I mean, we talked about it at the top of the show, said, hey, you know, it doesn't appear to be the most attractive card in the world. Is there anything that catches your eye and is worth an investment to try and keep the hot hand rolling forward?
This is an ugly card. And so there's some weeks you just kind of got to know when to fold them, so to speak. It is not going to be a high volume week for me and from a lot of the professional bettors that I speak to. The sides are pretty limited, and when you just have this rash of underdogs, you kind of know the favorites potentially could start rolling in here a little bit, so you don't want to get crushed by that. Let's go back to our old roots, though. And since we've stopped giving these out, conveniently the market seems to open them now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. And it's funny how things work. When I was checking around, every week last year we tried to do this. We couldn't get them out because the numbers weren't available. Then lo and behold, all of a sudden, guess what? The entire market's open.
This is good. So, and I just kind of want to, probably not as strong as what we've given out so far. So maybe you just go like a notch down just a touch. But I really like this Eagles Titans first half under 20.5. You're going to want to listen to this podcast, I would think, sooner rather than later. If you have friends that listen to this or coworkers, let them know sooner rather than later. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe if Alshon Jeffrey gets upgraded, maybe if J.J. gets upgraded, this number can stick a little bit. But just when I look at Tennessee's offense, we had Dr. Chow on Monday. He said, listen, it's clear Marcus Mariota is limited as a passer right now. So you'd think a lot of dink and dunk. You'd think probably a lot of Derrick Henry, a lot of Deion Lewis. On the other side of the ball, you still have Carson Wentz working his way back. It's still going to be a limited menu, so to speak. They had the great, early scripted drive. But after that, against a lackluster Colts defense, it wasn't that efficient from Philadelphia's offense. So I still think they're working their way back here with Carson Wentz under the helm. So I think we could see a slow start here.
Run the football. Get us to the half, 4-3, 3-2, good old baseball score.
Baseball score.
Something along those lines. I mean, hey, we're getting close to the Major League Baseball playoffs, and unlike the Philadelphia baseball edition, the Eagles at least have something to play for. They haven't completely cratered.
What's going on with my guy Glaber? I see he's out again with the vagina pull.
I got bad news. I don't think your boy is going to take home the hardware that you've so coveted.
It's a sham, but I saw again the hip. He apparently is out the last couple games with hip
tightness
again.
Not ideal. I mean, our boy Didi at least has been cleared for baseball activities. The Yankees are a bit of a mash unit. But you know who's going to win the American League Rookie of the Year, don't you?
Andujar?
No, I think it's going to be Shohei.
They're just going to hand it to him.
I mean, he's put up some good numbers for the amount of time the guy's missed and he hasn't been able to pitch. When he's out there, the dude's productive.
I know the league would love to hand him the fucking trophy just because, hey, the viewers that he's
it is a global game. Yep. Pain, and you have to try and sell tickets. So
absolutely. Man, that would be an absolute shafting to the Yankees, I think.
Wouldn't shock me in the least, but we'll see. I mean, everyone in Major League Baseball in the front offices don't always love our beloved Bronx Bombers. We'll see how things play out there, but a playoff baseball right around the corner, as you can hear on the tangent for us. But In the meantime, Payne, I'm going to give you final word if you have anything else to add. Otherwise, we're shutting this thing down, and we'll be back with everybody Monday for an intriguing Monday night game as we get to talk a little bit more Patrick Mahomes hype.
Ooh, Patty Mahomes, baby. I think we could have something there, potentially. Still digging around there.
He's
one
your
last
dude.
Thing.
That's your dude.
Last thing before we leave, and I forgot this at the top of the show. This was the week we were going to announce the other iTunes winner. The winner is BobDaddy5. So contact us, email us, shoot us a tweet just with a screenshot of your review. You won the iTunes contest for the 5-star review. Keep those rolling in if you're listening. We just put everyone's name in like a simulator once every few weeks, and they pop up, and we'll give you the nice little Bet the Board swag pack, Visa gift card, plus some gear, t-shirts, pens, that sort of thing. And my feeling is we'll probably just do another one of those like around week 7. So every few weeks we'll be doing this. So leave those 5-star reviews, leave a nice little comment. You automatically get entered into this contest that we'll be running every few weeks for iTunes.
Yeah, remember, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your people that you don't even like, your coworkers. We don't care. 2,000 5-star reviews. Otherwise, Payne and I are taking a week off in October. So, I mean, that's the nature of the business. You guys
You're
just don't.
You're a big trick-or-treater. Now that you have a girlfriend, you can go trick-or-treating together maybe around that time.
You know what? I'm not even sure if that's on the docket. She did bring up Halloween costumes, but I told her with the football schedule, she gets to plan them out. So I'm a little bit afraid of what may happen, but don't worry about it. If we end up doing something for Halloween, there'll be pictures. You'll be able to take shots, and the listeners can all pile in.
You love dressing up. I've seen you in the chicken costume a few times now, looking like a total dork off.
That chicken costume, if that chicken costume could talk, I mean, this podcast wouldn't be rated PG-13.
Really?
So, I mean, you know, we all have, you know, sordid escapades in the past, but that chicken costume has had it been retired. I mean,
I've seen you in action once, only once, and it was a strikeout, the Eastern European chick and South Beach. That was, quickly.
Where was it? I mean, I think part of it was the language barrier that contributed. That had to be like 5 or 7 years ago at Hyde Beach or whatever the hell it was.
I've never seen anyone make a U-turn quicker. Let's just put it that way. I thought I was with the was it an Asian woman?
I'm not quite sure.
And I said, man, I might actually get some alone time here. Nope. Todd was back as quick as possible. That U-turn, I've never seen something so quick.
You know what? Every now and again, you try and go up to the plate. You like Chris Davis, you go up there, you swing at 3 pitches, and and all of a sudden you're sent back to the dugout, even though you know they're throwing fastballs right down the pipe. But before things escalate too far and, you know, I don't know where this is going to deteriorate into, let's close up shop. So it is the Eagles and Titans. First half under, 20.5 the buy price. Get it early, get it often, and come Sunday afternoon, we'll see you at the window.